This is Shirley Katz recording an interview with Rabbi Joseph Shapiro, June the 11th, 1974, for the Council of Jewish Women, Pittsburgh Branch, Oral History Project 2.
My parents of blessed memory were born in Lithuania, near the city known as Telšiai, the town where they were born was known as Lukava. From there, they migrated to Manchester, England. And it was there in Manchester that I was born, in Cheetham Hill section, Street, Lord Street, the number of the house, as I recall, was 48. From Manchester, we moved on to Liverpool. I was the baby of six children. My father, of blessed memory, was a merchant. My early Jewish and secular education I received in an all-day Hebrew school in Liverpool. At the age of approximately 8 and a half, I followed my mother, now of blessed memory, and some of the family coming to Montreal, Canada, where my two older sisters had already been. My father passed on in Liverpool before we made this trip, and was interred on what is known as the Princess Road Synagogue Cemetery.
Rabbi, what was his name?
The name of my beloved late father was Avrohom Mordechai in Hebrew, and known as Max Shapiro. My mother's name is Tzipa Hester, and is referred to in the English as Esther Shapiro.
What kind of merchant, did he sell?
My father, blessed memory, had a men's clothing store, a small one, from which he was able to eke a livelihood for the family.
Why did the two sisters, the older sisters, go to Montreal?
They were invited by some of the relatives who were more prosperous than we. And being the two oldest of the family, they went ahead of us.
There were six children, so the four of you and your mother went to Montreal. Is that correct?
There were actually five.
Oh, five.
Did I mention six?
You six.
Oh, I think.
You, there were seven?
No.
You were six. And you went to Montreal then to live.
Yes. In Montreal, I entered the public school, mm-hmm. attended a Talmud Torah in the afternoons. Shortly thereafter, was registered as a student of the yeshiva, which existed at that time in Montreal.
Mm-hmm. Well, did it have a name?
It was just known at that time, the yeshiva of Montreal.
Yeshiva of Montreal. How old were you when you were there?
When I went into the yeshiva, I was 11 years of age, and remained until shortly after my becoming Bar Mitzvah. At which time I entered what was known then as the yeshiva Rabbi Isaac Elkanah.
Oh yes, that was in what city?
New York City. On the east side.
East side, that's right. And how old were you there?
I was just a little past the Bar Mitzvah age.
Isn't that very young?
It's rather young.
Oh my.
But I came there, and at the time there were no dormitories and no dining rooms in the yeshiva. So that we were obliged, the students, to rent rooms in the east side, or on the east side of New York.
With family?
With some families. And eat in the kosher restaurants, which were found in that section.
Yes, there were lots of them. So you were by yourself in New York?
In New York, but there were other Montrealers, that is, students who came along, and some had preceded us.
And your mother and the other children remained in Montreal?
Remained in Montreal.
I see.
I don't recall my father, I'm not sure.
You were very young.
Because I was 2 years of age at the time of his demise.
Oh, did your mother how did she make a living in Montreal?
The older children started to work at an early age.
I see.
Whatever they were able to earn went towards the sustenance of the family.
I see.
My sainted mother was a prolific reader. I recall as a youngster, on Sunday afternoons, my mother would ask me to go to the Baron de Roche library and take out about five or six books for her to read in the course of the week. They were all read completely for the next Sunday, and this kept on for quite a number of years. And of course, in those days, we didn't have all the conveniences that we have today, appliances and so on. Clothes had to be washed by hand. There was no electricity for a while. Got along on gas. No telephone. A committee was delegated from Braddock, PA, to come to the yeshiva, known as the Yeshiva
Brother Yitzchak Elchanan in New York City, where I, at that time, was just about graduated as rabbi. I met with the committee, and shortly thereafter I was notified that I was appointed and elected as the rabbi of the community of Braddock, which consisted of two Orthodox congregations. There were no other congregations whatsoever except these two, and both were Orthodox. And there had already been dedicated the Jewish Community Center, with various activities took place, where the Hebrew school met daily, and also where the Sunday religious school met every Sunday. I was pleasantly surprised upon leaving the train of the Pennsylvania station at Braddock, when I saw on the platform waiting for me a welcoming committee which consisted, I believe, of not less than some 40 odd people. It was, to say the least, very encouraging. I, at that time, was still single. It was after my engagement. And I, of course, had to look for a place to live in. I found a very suitable room on Mills Street, and the people who rented it out to me were the late Mr. and Mrs. Grossberger, two very fine angelic people. I ate my meals at the home of the late Mr. and Mrs. Nathan Weisman. Mr. Weisman was one of the kosher butchers in Braddock, and the other kosher butcher was the late Mr. Berkowitz. At the time, there were two shochtim in Braddock. That is, who took care of the chickens to be slaughtered, the meat they got from Pittsburgh, which was slaughtered here in Pittsburgh at the time. There were four teachers engaged for the daily classes of the Hebrew school, and I was to supervise them. There was a very large Sunday religious school with many teachers, and this too was under my supervision. The Hebrew school at the time when I came had a student body of approximately between 100 and 125. The both congregations were filled to capacity on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And I began, at the time being, when I first came, to speak one day in one shul, Rosh Hashanah, and the other day in the second shul. No homes were available for rent in Braddock proper, so we had to look around for the closest available, which was on the borderline of Swissvale and Braddock. amongst our neighbors were of great help to a young married couple, as we were shortly after my coming, were the late Mr. and Mrs. Louis Zamor. The residence on Belmar Place, where we lived at here, were mostly Jewish families, among which were the after Shub, S-H-U-B, Stark, Fierst, F-I-E-R-S-T, and Rosen families, etc. On the afternoon of the first day Rosh Hashanah, I was visited by a committee delegated by the Rankin Shul to invite me to address them on the afternoon of the second day of Rosh Hashanah, which was, of course, within walking distance to our home. I gladly accepted the invitation, and again I was very pleasantly surprised to find when I came into the shul that it was filled by men and women. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Being somewhat distantly located as far as residence is concerned from my duties in Braddock, it was about a half hour's walk from my home to Shul in Braddock for Shabbos and Yom Tov. The average Jewish family in Braddock at the time were either merchants who resided and had their places of business in Braddock, or merchants who had their business in Braddock and resided in Pittsburgh, principally Squirrel Hill. And a number served as employees for the Edgar Thompson Works of Braddock, PA. There were quite a number of young men and women who belonged to these congregations and who came to some of my adult classes. I was offered at the time being, by way of contract, a contract for 3 years with the salary stipulated at $3,600 for the first year, $3,800 for the second, and $4,000 for the third, which, of course, in those days was considered exceptionally good. However, it did not take long before the depression set in. And the mills were closed down completely, the steel mills. thus depriving those who might have worked there, making them jobless, and as a result, the storekeepers on the main street were not able to remain for long in business, since there were few people who could afford to buy any merchandise. When I saw what was happening, I felt it was my solemn duty at the time being to stick by the guns and not leave them, because they were not able to live up to the contract as far as salary is concerned. And whatever they were able to give, I accepted. My contention was that money should not be in the way of the spiritual elevation of a community, especially that children should not be deprived of the knowledge of their great heritage. No. In Braddock, no. No. In Pittsburgh, when I came to Pittsburgh, of course, it wasn't called the fellowship. It was called the Vad Harabonim, the Council of Rabbis, and this consisted only of Orthodox rabbis. I'll be glad to give you the names. Yeah. Yeah.
So you stayed in Braddock for
5 years. 5 years. Yes. Yeah. And then I was elected to the pulpit of Paul Zedek, where I had served as a rabbi for over 40 years.
And
you mean how I was elected? My predecessor, who was Rabbi Saul, S-O-L-B, Friedman of blessed memory, had gone to New York City, and Braddock, of course, and Pittsburgh being so close geographically, presumably they must have heard of my name at least, and some of them evidently must have known me, so I was extended an invitation to address them, which I did.
Did you have a family at this point?
Our oldest son and the second to him and the other son, these two were born while we were still in Braddock. Our oldest son, though, was born actually in Montefiore Hospital. Yes. And I mentioned before the kindness extended by some of our neighbors when Mr. Shapiro had to go to the hospital. I didn't have, of course, any means of conveyance. So our next door neighbor, Mr. Louis Seymour, of blessed memory, took us both in his truck to Montefiore Hospital. And it was the late Dr. Lichtenstein who delivered the baby. The second child was born in Braddock Hospital, and he was delivered by the late Dr. Oscar Polk, P-O-L-K. Our daughter was born when we had just shortly after come to Pittsburgh, and the other two sons following likewise.
Was there a radical change in the way you lived in Braddock, as in the way you had to adapt?
wasn't much of a change because, of course, the teachings, that is the Torah, is the same Torah. Your principles should be your principles no matter where you are. And, of course, the recipients of these teachings could vary, but the Torah itself remains, yeah. The average was perhaps a little more affluent than the average Jew or Jewess was in Pladik, the average.
How large a congregation
when in the Pladik or in Pittsburgh? Here. When I came here, if I recall, I think they mentioned at the time there were about, I think around 150 in that neighborhood of. They must have had, since both shoes were filled, although not everybody was a member, they could have been a worshipper. I imagine that as far as membership is concerned, each shul must have had a membership of no less than 50 to 75. Approximately. Members. No, it's not foolish at all. It's a universal question. Of course, somebody might have answered that question very facetiously by saying, well, after all, you can only have one president for one shul. And since there's always one, more than one who wants to be a president, then the first thing happens is another shul. But of course, this is putting it very facetiously. However, you see, you must remember, Shirley, that when Jewish people migrated to the United States of America, they looked for some landslide of their own community from which they came. In fact, the Tzedek congregation was commonly known as the Hungarian Shul. In contrast to what was known on the hill as the Russian Shul, and the Polish shul, and the Romanian shul, etc., etc. They yearned for some association, some of them having no family at all, coming to a strange city, so that at least there would be a sort of a common tie that would link them together, knowing that they came from the same shtetl, or from the same town, or from the same city. This perhaps would buoy them up in case they needed some advice. They would naturally go first to their own landslide. So that, to answer your question, the 11th Shul, which is known as the 11th Shul or the Talmud Shul, was founded by a group of Hungarian Jews. Whereas the 6th Shul was founded by many Galician and Polish Jews. And this, of course, gave rise to two shuls.
So you came here and where did you...
Could I put a story in?
Oh, sure.
I came across, of course, of my readings many years ago. There was a gentleman known as Reverend Maslianski, and he was known as an orator, a Jewish orator, who spoke in Jewish. When he came to New York, he would deliver an address on Thursday nights in what was known as the Education Alliance, Jewish Education Alliance, the corner of Clinton and East Broadway. There was a seating capacity of possibly 500 or more, and this place would be filled on on these Thursday nights, because people would want to hear something expounded by this great orator, Reverend Masliansky. And he began to write his memoirs, his own autobiography, I should say. And I remember distinctly, once I attended one of these addresses, and I was very much impressed. I attended it as a student once. But when I came across this written by him, this is what he said, that when he reached New York City, coming from Europe, he strolled along East Broadway, and his eye was attracted by a sign on the second floor, on the front wall. Did I mention it to you? No. And he looks up and he sees a sign reading Hungarian Jew, which meant that some Hungarian Jews had started and organized this shul, this landslide. He walks a little further on. Again, he looks up on the second floor and further down on the same street, and he sees a sign, a Russian shul. This keeps on. Every few houses further down, Polish shul, Romanian shul, Galician shul. Then he writes, when I saw all this, Romanian shul, Galician shul, and so on, I stopped. And I turned my face towards the heavens and said, Rebono Shalolam, Ben Bereshin Gefinina Idesh Shu, Venahe. But this gives us, of course, a sort of a keen insight of what happened when we can't, of course, appreciate it because we are raised in a certain environment where everybody seems to mix and so on and so forth. But this was not so in those days. Sweatshops and so on, so that they looked for a little peace of mind by being at least in same contact with their landslide. Well, of course, on account of the financial straits in which we found ourselves to be, as many others did, including the laity, on account of the Depression, at least we were given a salary which was commensurate to some degree of existence at the time. So it was helpful in that sense. And when I came here, they also had their Hebrew teachers and Sunday religious school. And we had quite a few activities going on. Well, to put it rather briefly, there wasn't too much opportunity for relaxation. For the simple reason that, especially as a newcomer, which doesn't mean just the first day, it keeps on being that for a while. And at that time, there were very, very many Jewish organizations. And of course, each one, we didn't have much of anything of TV at the time to speak of. And radio programs weren't too frequent, at least those which were perhaps worthwhile listening to. So people attended these meetings. I would come to them and address them, being invited to. And then answering certain questions which are raised by individuals to the rabbi, certain problems and certain matters of Jewish law and so on. So that actually there wasn't much time for, as far as I'm concerned.
Did you find in those early years that you counseled a great deal?
Very much so, very much so. And this has been going on ever since I came. Yeah. Now, the people who would come for counsel would not necessarily be members or worshippers of Kali Tzedek. A number of them came from different parts of the community, but it was immaterial to me because they were all the Jewish people, and even if a non-Jew was here to have come to ask any advice, if I could give it, I'd be more than glad to offer it and so on.
Did you, being born in England, did you speak Yiddish?
Okay.
Yes,
see, because as I pointed out last time, I don't remember my father, Oliver Sholem, as I was 2 years of age at the time he deceased. But at the house with my mother, Oliver Sholem, we spoke Yiddish. Although my mother was able to speak English and read English.
Yes.
Yeah, but the spoken language. Surely. So, and in fact, when I first came here, most of the sermons which were delivered on Shabbos morning were in Yiddish.
Really?
Yeah. Because the vast majority, even of the younger element, Yiddish was a spoken language.
Yes, we
spoke it
now.
Sure. Was a common practice of that time, and for a good time after that, that people would try to keep themselves from bringing these suits before the courts. So that I mentioned before that when I came, there was a Vad Harabonim, a council of rabbis, which consisted of the Orthodox rabbis, then there was the late Rabbi Zivitz, of blessed memory, and late Rabbi Mashinsky, Rabbi Kochan, Rabbi Devine, and in fact I was the youngest. We would meet weekly at one of the shuls downtown, and any problems that arose in the community, those individuals, they would come down to the meeting and place their question or problem before the rabbanim and ask them for their advice. And at times there were what was known as Dine Torah. In other words, the defendant would appear together with his opponent, and the rabbis would listen carefully to the arguments raised and so on and so forth, and come forth with a decision.
And it was called, I got the last name.
Yeah, V-A-A-D, Vad Harabonim, H-A, Rabbonim, R-A-B-O-N-I-M-B-B. No, I mean, she was quite busy. I mean, the women, for instance, would, again, there were women's organizations, the sisterhood here, and sisterhoods elsewhere, but perhaps they had no rabbi, or no rabbis either. So they would call on, for instance, to talk and so on and so forth. And then the various organizations. I was particularly interested in the Hapoel HaMizrahi, that is now they joined with the Mizrahi and known now by the RZA, or Religious Zionists of America. The first national convention which was held by the Hapoel HaMizrahi in Pittsburgh was many years ago, and I was asked to serve as the national chairman for the convention. It was held at the William Penn Hotel at the time being, and lasted over a number of days.
Fairly soon.